are friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Mike, how hard are you right now?
Oh, man, I've been hard since you said, hi, welcome to Friends with Fantasy Benefits podcast.
Don't protect him at all. Like, he's going to die one day because they just literally let guys come through and do whatever they want.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
They were pulling at, I know, you and I's heartstrings last week.
That means that it is Kenneth Dixon time, or so everyone in the fantasy industry would have you believe.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
We did see a Cordarrelle Patterson sighting multiple times last week. And
it's like we're coming in. It's like 2014 all over again. We got Cordarrelle Patterson sightings. We have Brian Quick sightings.
We are Friends with Fantasy Benefits.
Welcome to episode 87 of the Friends of Fantasy Benefits football podcast. I am Justin Mason, lead fantasy writer and analyst for friendsoffantasybenefits.com. Joining me on this episode is Mike Warner. Mike, how you doing?
I'm doing well. I am watching a version of football on Thursday night here between the 49ers and the Cardinals. So luckily, with Carson Palmer gone, the Cardinals will still be able to win pretty handedly because David Johnson is the absolute man and nobody can stop him. He's just a one-man freight train. But this is also the return of Tom Brady. So this is going to be a pretty fun week.
Yeah, I pretty much stopped watching the Thursday night football game about halfway through the second quarter. And I haven't even turned it back on. I've been mostly watching the baseball playoffs. But I did check my fantasy teams, and I definitely am playing up against Larry Fitzgerald right now.
Yeah, he had a couple touchdowns as well. I'm kind of flicking back and forth, mainly staying on the baseball game, but I was able to catch a lot of nice runs from David Johnson. I saw the Larry Fitzgerald obvious push off that was a touchdown anyways, even though, you know, everybody wants to praise Fitzgerald. He's so overrated. I think he's overrated. I still think he's a sell high.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have a problem selling high on him now, especially, you know, after a two-touchdown performance. Might as well try to get it. That whole situation in Arizona is really scary with, you know, Carson Palmer being injured again. I mean,
Michael Floyd dropping literally everything.
Another, so frustrating.
Dropped another ball tonight, and that would have went for a first down. And this is becoming something that, over the course of games, it's going to continue to hamper him. You know, if it's in his mind and he psychologically, you know, has that in the back of his head, then it's not going to work out if he keeps on doing this. So, I mean, you have to be worried if you're a Michael Floyd owner, like I am in a lot of leagues. I'm really debating what I should even do with him at this point.
Yeah. Let's move on in. So start talking about Tom Brady and his return. Our first game on the docket is the New England Patriots versus the Cleveland Browns. Mike, what is your takeaway for this game?
I mean, the obvious is that, you know, Brady's returning. I think that we really need to, like, look into what that does to this offense as a whole. So you have somebody like LeGarrette Blount, who, you know, through this season has been, I believe, the number one running back in terms of standard league fantasy points, or close to that. And I think that there's going to be a massive difference in, you know, the running back workload moving forward. James White was somebody that was fairly consistent down the stretch last season. He still has been targeted at least five times in three or four games. He ended up with nine touches last week. I think that they are going to use James White with Tom Brady back as, you know, the guy that pretty much assumes, you know, 65-70% of the snaps. And, you know, yes, there will be a ton of game scripts where, you know, the Patriots are leading by a ton and they can just run LeGarrette Blount like they do in the second half. And, you know, he'll obviously be the goal line back from here forward as well. But, you know, you and I know have been big fans of James White, and hopefully you were able to pick him up last week or the week before, preparing yourself for this moment when Brady returns. But I think James White, especially again in PPR leagues, is a running back two moving forward. As far as, you know, the rest of the pieces here, Julian Edelman gets a massive uptick. Danny Amendola could be somebody usable in deeper PPR formats. I still don't think Chris Hogan is somebody that's on my radar, but you know, if you want to talk about Gronkowski, This is more of a health issue. I still don't think that this has anything to do with talent. He hasn't really run many routes yet. He's been blocking, but I think Gronk and Martellus Bennett will be tight end ones this season. Obviously, Gronkowski much higher, you know, in the pecking order as the season goes on. But I think that this is just full steam ahead for the Patriots.
Yeah, and I mean, I like Martellus Bennett. One of the things that you kind of preached in the preseason that I didn't buy in completely fully, but through the first, you know, little bit of Gronk playing this year, you really see how much that benefits Martellus Bennett, having Gronk on the field. I mean, it's really hard for defenses to have to focus on both of those tight ends. Gives Bennett a little bit easier time getting open. And I think you saw that in the last game, in which, you know, what, five catches for 109 yards. I mean, if he had been able to haul in a touchdown with that, that would have been great. But still, that's a pretty nice day for a tight end you got really, really late in a draft.
Yeah, and I still hold the stance that they both are going to complement each other. I think a lot of people are worried that, you know, with Gronkowski being back over the last few weeks and as he gets healthier, that Bennett is going to see his role kind of decrease. I don't think so. I think it's the opposite. I think that once Gronkowski gets healthy, we will see more one-on-one coverage with Bennett not getting the better linebacker and being able to kind of eat in that manner. Hopefully people didn't drop Bennett when he had, kind of a bad stretch here at the beginning of the season, because, you know, I think from here forward, he's going to be at least a top 10 guy.
What do you do with Terrell Pryor in this game? Because, I mean, you know, he's been a very productive receiver this year so far, but It seems like a different offense with McCown out and them having to play Cody Kessler. Is he a guy that is really startable for you this week?
Yeah, I have him ranked as a wide receiver 3 this week, and I think that the Patriots, like the line, Vegas line says, like pretty much anybody is saying, they're going to end up winning this game pretty handedly. And, you know, also something that we're not taking into account is that Pryor could very well get some rushing attempts and play some quarterback again in this game, even though he didn't do it much last week. I think Hugh Jackson is going to try and pull out all the stops against New England. Again, I don't think he'll be successful. But in terms of Terrell Pryor's, you know, lone fantasy value, you have to think of him as a wide receiver 3. The last 3 weeks, you know, 10, 14, and 9 targets respectively for the season, over almost 300 yards receiving and a touchdown there. And, you know, especially if we're adding some rushing yards in and we're adding even some passing attempts, possibly touchdowns in that manner, you certainly have to, you know, feel okay about that. The matchup isn't great, but I do think the volume is there. He is number 8 in targets among all NFL receivers. That includes tight ends. You'll feel comfortable with him as a wide receiver 3. It might not necessarily be a bust out week like in week 2, but I do think that he's a safe floor guy.
Yeah, I have him as a kind of a mid low end wide receiver 2 this week. I like, it's not a great matchup necessarily, at least on paper, but it is a game in which they're going to be down and having to throw. And the idea that he could play some quarterback too, that just boosts his value. I like him a lot this week. As a guy, especially kind of in garbage time at the end of the game.
Mm-hmm.
New England Patriots at the Cleveland Browns. Mike, who you got?
Definitely New England.
Ooh, New England's going to win this game. Let's go ahead and move on. And we'll talk about the Philadelphia Eagles, the undefeated Philadelphia Eagles coming off a bye week going at Detroit. Mike, what's your takeaway?
Dwayne Washington probably won't be playing this game. He hasn't practiced yet this week, and pretty much all indications are that he will not be playing or suiting up for this matchup, which kind of is upsetting to me. I really was hoping to kind of get another glimpse of him. Not that this was a great matchup against Philadelphia, who's a pretty solid run defense at this point.
Yeah, very good defensive line, especially in the interior.
Absolutely, you know, and second best fantasy points per game given up to the running back position. The only team better is Green Bay. But regardless, I think that this is going to be a situation where, Detroit kind of struggles. And I'm really interested on, you know, what, as far as Golden Tate is concerned, they benched him at the end of last week. And we've seen his role in this offense kind of get hindered a bit based on Marvin Jones and just based on this offense in general. I mean, I'm starting to think that Golden Tate is droppable in pretty much all formats at this point, unless, you know, we see a turn.
I'm not ready to pull the trigger on that.
No, I mean, again, that's kind of what I'm saying here is like not right this second, but like if we go through another week of him not doing anything and he again loses more snaps. I mean, that's my biggest concern is that if he only plays half the snaps, then that's a problem for me. Mm-hmm. Mind you, Eric Ebron is likely not going to be suiting up this week. And, you know, that leaves a wide open hole in the middle of the field. Usually Golden Tate or Anquan Boldin will assume kind of the slot role. So I don't think that this is a time to necessarily drop Golden Tate right now. But if this is the best case scenario with Ebron being out for Tate to kind of assume the middle of the field and get a ton of targets that way. And if he doesn't, then I just don't know when you'll be able to use him if they're not going to start doing it now.
Yeah, I think he's going to rebound. You know, he's too good of a player to be doing what he's been doing. And I think as Marvin Jones really starts to, you know, just establish himself as the team's number one wide receiver, defenses are going to have to shift to try to better cover him. And get in his face more, giving Golden Tate a better opportunity to get open on the outside. So I like Golden Tate, not necessarily for this week, but moving on forward.
What do you think about Carson Wentz?
I've been really impressed by Carson Wentz. You know, when we had at the beginning, the beginning of the preseason, I think it was our first episode of the preseason. We had Scott Bogman on, and we asked him. Him being, you know, he's a big college football guy, has his own college football podcast over at ITL. And we asked him, like, who is the quarterback you most like in a, you know, out of this draft class? And so it was surprising to me when he picked Carson Wentz. Now, he gave the caveat that it may take him a little while to transition to the NFL. You know, and for me, that's been the interesting thing. He's transitioned really, really well. And I mean, don't get me wrong, they're doing things within the scheme to help him. You know, they're not asking him necessarily to do too much, but I really like what I've seen from Carson Wentz. And as long as they continue to put him in the best spots to be productive, I think he will be.
Yeah, I have Wentz as a top 10 quarterback this week. Wow. So I think that if you were, if you have Drew Brees on bye or, you know, whoever else, that if you need a fill-in option, that Carson Wentz is an amazing play for this week. Detroit has been just terrible on defense thus far. I don't know if DeAndre Levy will be playing again this week, but, you know, giving up the second most fantasy points per game to the position and, you know, just has not looked good. So I think that Carson Wentz will certainly be able to carve himself a nice role here against this team. And I mean, on top of that, you know, I don't know what your topic was going to be, but this running back core from
that was
going to
be my topic.
Yeah. Well, go ahead on it. Yeah.
You know, I was a big Ryan Matthews supporter coming into the season because I didn't feel like there was much competition. And while I still don't feel like there's a ton of worthy competition on that team, he has not been impressive. I mean, I know he left the last game with like an ankle injury or something like that, and he seems to be okay coming into this week. But I'm really worried that you're going to start seeing a running back by committee really forming in this backfield.
Yeah, Matthews should be he has gotten the most red zone touches for any of the running backs, and that includes him pretty much missing the majority of week three. Mm-hmm. The thing is, I don't think Darren Sproles' role changes at all in this whole entire thing. He stays consistent, getting his, you know, multiple receptions a game and stuff like that. What it comes down to is I think that Wendell Smallwood is an ad. You know, regardless of what happens this week, this is a very good matchup for Philly on each side, you know, whether you want to go quarterback or running back. So I do think that regardless of this week, Smallwood is a guy that you can grab. The biggest takeaway, too, from week three is that they didn't plan on Smallwood playing a ton. He earned it as the game went on. He just looked that good. I've never really been a fan of Smallwood. I think that he is a, you know, kind of a passing down, kind of a Darren Sproles-esque type guy with not the same upside while, you know, Sproles was in his prime. But regardless, with Matthew's injury history and the fact that they have so many other options, I think that this show the main two things is that Ryan Matthews' value is going to go down and that Smallwood is an ad that we might be able to use later on down the line.
Yeah, I mean, I think if you're a Matthews owner, I think you have to add Smallwood. I mean, as a hand.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, absolutely.
Especially if Matthews is a guy that's one of your top two or three running backs, I think you need Smallwood on your roster. I mean, I like Smallwood. I didn't think he'd play a huge role this year. You know, and I agree with you. I think he's, you know, more of a third down kind of passing back. And they already had Darren Sproles. So it was, I was surprised when he kind of got called on instead of Kenyon Barner in that game after Matthews went down. I mean, Barner had 8 carries for 42 yards and a touchdown, but you know, I would worry if something did happen to Matthews, I would worry that it would turn into a complete kind of committee. And I'm still worried that it's going to turn into a committee.
Yeah, absolutely. I do just want to bring up Zach Ertz. He probably will return in this game, and he is an automatic start for me.
Yes.
Especially against Detroit. If you want to go through their game logs, week one, Jack Doyle, Dwayne Allen combined for over 80 yards receiving and 3 touchdowns. Week two, Delanie Walker over 80 yards and a touchdown. Week three, Richard Rodgers scored a touchdown. And week four, Zach Miller a touchdown. And that, it, you know, also goes in line with the quarterback play against them as well. I mean, we just saw Brian Hoyer score, you know, 300 yards. Yards and multiple touchdowns against them. They have had Aaron Rodgers and Andrew Luck, but Mariota also had multiple touchdowns as well against this Detroit defense. I think, you know, Carson Wentz again is a top 10 play.
All right. We have Philadelphia at Detroit. Who you got, Mike?
I'm going to go Philadelphia. 4-0 Philadelphia.
Wow. Yeah, about to be 5-0 Philadelphia. I'm taking Philly as well. Let's go ahead and move on and talk about the Indianapolis Colts, who are hosting the Chicago Bears. I mean, my takeaway has got to be about the Chicago running game. And is this the beginning of kind of the breakout for Jordan Howard? Because he looked pretty decent last week.
Yeah, absolutely. I think that this is going, I mean, the Indianapolis run defense is the borderline worst in the league. Somebody that you definitely want to target. I have Jordan Howard as a top 10 play this week as well, if I'm not mistaken, at the running back position. So, you know, I certainly like him. He's pretty much the only guy on the Bears that I'm automatically going to start in every lineup. You can definitely make that argument for Jeffrey.
Sean Jeffrey. Yeah, I mean, you've got to start Jeffrey.
Yeah, but I'm also worried. You know, I mean, we have no Kevin White now. They're going to be relying on Eddie Royal, who also is hurt, you know, who, you know, I mean, shocker, he never is hurt, right? So if you're looking a little bit deeper in, you know, your 14, 16 team leagues, I think that an interesting guy is Cameron Meredith, actually, undrafted free agent out of Illinois. He got 5 or 6 targets last week. Really good size on him, 6'3", 200 pounds. Eddie Royal, again, is somebody that just constantly gets injured. And, you know, obviously Alshon Jeffrey has been, it can't just do the offense by himself. So, you know, the fact that he got, you know, 5 targets last week, caught 4 of them is certainly something to look at. He does have a little bit of athleticism as well. So I think that, you know, as far as the Bears offense goes, you know, certainly start Howard and Jeffrey, and then kind of just keep your eye on somebody like Cameron Meredith in deep leagues.
Yeah, I like I like the call on Meredith. I think he's a guy that could surprise if you're in a deeper format. Or, I mean, you know, I know we're not the DFS podcast, and you and I will be recording that here in a few minutes after this one. But he might be an interesting guy because I'm sure he's probably league minimum on FanDuel and DraftKings.
Yeah.
What's your takeaway for this game, Mike?
I guess I'll throw it over to the Colts side. I'm getting a little bit worried about Philip Dorsett. He had a prime matchup last week against Jacksonville, and thank God he caught that long 64-yard touchdown.
What a beauty that was.
That was beautiful, but, I mean, the Jacksonville defense just literally let him go. It was not contested at all. I'm getting a little bit worried about this Indianapolis team as a whole. The offensive line has not played well. The coaching, just the amount of penalties, they're just not organized. They're not coached well. You know, and with Andrew Luck, you know, we're waiting on him to, you know, continue to, you know, kind of grow and everything. I just don't feel like he's getting given the opportunity to do so on a team that is just not ran properly and doesn't give him the opportunity to have a little bit of protection. They don't protect him at all. Like, he's going to die one day because they just literally let guys come through and do whatever they want. You know, as of right now, he's still the top, you know, a top 6 quarterback in fantasy, which is nice compared to what you kind of paid for him. I know he was a top 4 guy in drafts, you know, but the Chicago passing defense is terrible. They've lost Kyle Fuller this year, which was their best corner, who wasn't even that great in the first place. I think T.Y. Hilton and Phil Dorsett are great plays. I also think that you can, you know, kind of throw Dwayne Allen in there if you need at tight end, based on, you know, kind of his work last week. He got more targets and more snaps than Jack Doyle. But I'm worried about this Indianapolis offense as a whole until they start protecting Andrew Luck better, until they clean some things up.
Yeah. I think there's a lot to be concerned with in Indianapolis, and it all starts up front with the offensive line. I mean, if Luck doesn't have time to throw, it's going to be hard for guys like T.Y. Hilton and Philip Dorsett to get down the field, and that's where they're most effective is, you know, if they can get out into open space down the field. So I'm worried, you know, especially about Dorsett, who's a guy I really liked coming into the year as kind of a really kind of sneaky, cheap sleeper kind of guy. And with the Moncrief injury, has gotten to kind of, you know, bust up into a major role for that offense. But he can't get down the field if, you know, if Andrew Luck takes five steps back and is nailed. So it's going to be a long season for that Indianapolis Colts offense. I mean, I think Frank Gore is a really nice play this week, you know, against the Bears defense that is not very good. Other than that, I think, you know, you're obviously starting Luck, you're starting T.Y. Hilton, but unless you really need Philip Dorsett and kind of a boom or bust, I'm probably not starting him. Yeah. Let's go. Indianapolis Colts versus the Chicago Bears. Mike, who you got?
I'm going to go Indy, even though I kind of want to take Chicago.
I'm going to take Indianapolis because they're at home. That's about it.
Yeah.
Let's go ahead and move on, and let's talk about Tennessee at Miami. You know, those people in Florida who are being destroyed by this hurricane, our thoughts and prayers are with you. You know, hopefully you are safe and out of the area. You've gone to kind of safer grounds than Florida right now. But if you are there, just hold on strong and hopefully help will be on the way. You know, in terms of this game, keep an eye out for the weather. I mean, there's a chance that this game could get moved. It could get the time of it could get moved, the day of it could get moved. We may be talking about this being a Monday night game instead of a Sunday day game. So definitely keep an eye on a lot of those things. Are you afraid of the weather affecting the play in this game?
Not as of yet. There has been some, you know, talk that they might move the game in general. I think you have to kind of just wait and see on that. You know, if they do play the game there, then certainly monitor the winds, because that's obviously the biggest concern. If there's, you know, 30, 40 mile an hour wind gusts out there, then, you know, you need to take that into account as far as your pass catchers go. But as far as right now, I'm not concerned quite yet. We need to kind of wait and see what happens. It's just certainly something to monitor. You know, we're recording this on, you know, Thursday night. We don't know how the weather is going to change or what's going to happen in terms of Miami's conditions between now and then. So just make sure that you stay up on it.
Yeah. I mean, and this is something to keep an eye out for pretty much all of the East Coast games, Tennessee, Miami, Washington, Baltimore, you know, the Monday night tilt of Tampa Bay at Carolina. So maybe even New York at Pittsburgh. So, you know, these four games could be affected negatively by the weather. It's something to just kind of keep an eye out on. I don't tend to downgrade players necessarily because of weather, because for the most part, it doesn't typically affect things unless, like you said, like there's extreme wind. So, you know, kind of just keep an eye out, you know, check your weather reports on Sunday morning and kind of see what's going on. What's your takeaway for this game, Mike?
My takeaway is, you know, first off, DeMarco Murray is the number one running back in fantasy.
How insane is that?
You know, it is a little insane. He has ran well. I will give him that. Every game that I've watched him run, he's getting, you know, a few receptions. He already has almost 20 receptions this year. And, you know, he is by far the biggest focal point of this offense. We've had Delanie Walker be kind of unhealthy week in and week out. Derrick Henry has looked bad, in my opinion, not just slow or whatever, but he's just flat out looked bad. Like, he's not ready to be on an NFL field quite yet. So a lot of people's preseason prediction of, you know, Derrick Henry kind of getting a ton of the workload early and then just, you know, getting all of the, you know, snaps as the season went on is certainly something that is looking less and less likely by the week. With that said, I think that this is a perfect time to sell DeMarco Murray. I don't know if we've said that yet, but, you know, he's had 8 touches inside the 20 yard line. He's converted 3 touchdowns on those. That's not going to continue. That rate is something that I think will obviously regress back to the mean in a negative way for him. This is a great matchup against Miami, I'm not going to lie. Especially if there's a lot of wind gusts and problems there, then, you know, certainly certainly Tennessee will continue to run the ball with Murray for sure. And if you look at the games, you know, again, you know, Christine Michael had, you know, over 60 yards. When you combine that with Rawls in week one, over 100 combo yards. LeGarrette Blount had 120 in week two. Duke Johnson and Isaiah Crowell, you know, combined for over 150 yards. And then Jeremy Hill did nice on Thursday night as well. So, I mean, this is a Miami team that on defense is just not ready to, you know, be quality quite yet. And, you know, you kind of see that everywhere in terms of the stats. So I think that DeMarco Murray, again, is a great play for this week. And I give it up to him for doing what he's done. But even if you look at the weeks, you know, he ended up as the number six running back in week one, number nine in week two, number 11 in week three. And then in week four, he ended up being the number one guy, which I think kind of helped spark him go to be the number one running back this season thus far. So I'm not buying this. I think that, you know, as the season goes on, Murray's going to kind of regress a bit, and the Titans are going to be forced to throw a little bit more.
Yeah, I would agree with you. If I could get a guy that I consider a top five running back or a top five wide receiver for DeMarco Murray right now, I'm doing it.
Yeah, like Carlos Hyde, for instance, that running back I would certainly take for DeMarco Murray right now. You know, if somebody's crazy enough to offer you Zeke Elliott, I would definitely do that as well.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a number of guys that you could probably get for him. You know, I was a little bit, I think, higher on Derrick Henry than you were coming into the season.
Yeah.
So I'm still willing to kind of believe in him. I think he's one of those guys that may just need more carries and more action to really get things going. You know, but as long as DeMarco Murray is kind of up and running and healthy, I think that's going to be hard for him to get. So he's a guy that I'm definitely willing to drop if I need to go get someone else.
Yeah, for now, yeah.
All right. You know, let's talk about Ryan Tannehill real quick, because you were a big believer in Ryan Tannehill coming into the season. Are you still?
I'm definitely a little less excited than I was prior to the season starting, and it's not really because of fantasy production, because, I mean, if you look at the fantasy production...
Outside of last game, he's been okay.
For the season, you know, from week one to week four, he is the number 11 fantasy quarterback, which you can't really ask for much better. But if you've watched him, he looks terrible.
Atrocious.
He looks absolutely terrible.
And he's getting most of his production late in the game.
Yeah, and mostly in garbage. I mean, Cleveland almost did enough to have him have a terrible day. I mean, he kind of, you know,
Cleveland should have won that game.
Yeah, absolutely. And he kind of salvaged it later on. You look at Miami's offensive line, that's kind of part to blame. They've given up 11 sacks already this year. They are the worst pass protecting team, according to Football Outsiders metrics. You know, so obviously that has, you know, something to do with Tannehill there. But the thing that worries me the most is Adam Gase is kind of like, highly regarded in terms of being a quarterback coach. He has, you know, given other quarterbacks in the league just amazing years based on him being their leader, Jay Cutler being one of them, you know. And the fact that Tannehill, yes, he is the top 11 guy right now, but has looked so bad. I mean, he's thrown five interceptions the last three games. No, it's not a Ryan Fitzpatrick bad, but it's getting pretty bad here. So in this matchup against Tennessee in particular, I will say I think that he is a start. I'm not worried about Tennessee's offense or defense at all. They don't have anybody that can really cover Jarvis Landry or Devontae Parker for that matter. So I like Tannehill for this week. I have him as a top 12 guy, so I still believe in him again for this week. But you know, I certainly am not as excited as I was earlier in the season. And you know, if you kind of look at the schedule, I think that that's going to kind of play a part in him being okay for the rest of the way. I'm not thinking that he's going to be a top 10 guy or anything, but I can't completely fall off him because the schedule just isn't bad enough for him to, or isn't difficult enough for him to really fall off that bad.
If Arian Foster plays in this game, what would it take for you to start him?
You know, I know I ranked him this week thinking that there was a possibility he would play. I believe I had him outside of my top 30, if I'm not mistaken.
I don't believe I ranked him, so it looks like there's a chance he could play in this game. Oh, I did rank him. I ranked him 42nd, you ranked him 41st. We were the only two people to rank him.
There you go. I mean, we did see a report earlier this week that just to kind of take it back a bit, last week it was a complete mess. I mean, it's been a mess all season since Arian Foster went down in the running back core for Miami. But last week in particular, you saw, 16% of the snaps go to Kenyon Drake, 29% go to Damian Williams, 31% go to Jay Ajayi, and, 20% go to Isaiah Pede. We saw a report this week saying, no, that's not going to continue to happen. Adam Gase didn't like that. He wants to get a little bit more fluidity in the backfield here. So for me, based on what I saw last week from Ajayi on Thursday night, I think he is certainly going to continue to get a role here. He maybe is slowly getting himself out of the doghouse. He still is a hold for me in deeper formats and possibly an add right now in shallower formats if you are, in need of running back help. But, to answer your question, it would take a lot for me to start Foster. I don't feel great about it. And even if he does play, I don't think we are guaranteed even 10 touches for him. So I think that he is a massive risk if you do decide to go out there with him. I would much rather start, Kenneth Dixon just because he's been practicing consistently and they let go of Justin Forsett this week, which we'll get to.
Yeah, I mean, I think there's a number of guys I'd much rather start that are probably pretty widely available on waiver wires right now. That includes like a DeAndre Washington, a Jacques Rogers who might be out there, guys who are probably pretty widely available that probably would give a little bit more production because I worry about one, what kind of workload he'll have even if he does play, and two, with how wet the field will probably still be in Miami if they're playing in Miami. What that does to him being able to cut and move down the field. So, all right, let's pick this game. We have Tennessee at Miami. Mike, who you got?
Worse versus worser. I'll go with Miami just because they're at home.
Yeah, I'm going to go Miami as well. Let's move on. Washington at Baltimore. Mike, what's your takeaway for this game?
Man, I think it's Matt Jones and just... Yeah. I mean, watching him on the field, I feel like I always talk about Washington whenever you throw it over to me. But just watching him the last couple weeks, he looks like a completely different runner. And, if you look at offensive line play, at least based on the metrics, I haven't been able to really watch a ton of Washington football on Game Rewind or anything. But at least based on the metrics, they have improved a ton over the last few weeks. They are now all the way up to second in run blocking, again, according to Football Outsiders metrics. And it kind of shows over the last couple weeks. The Giants are not the worst interior defense against the run. And he had 65 rushing yards against them in week 3 on 17 touches. Last week blew it up against Cleveland, which is not the craziest thing to do in the world, but they are decent against the run this year, at least on the interior. And Matt Jones was able to kind of in tandem with the passing game from Washington do pretty well against Cleveland in there. So I'm starting to kind of buy Matt Jones a bit going forward just based on the fact that they need him, and he's done a better job of at least holding on to the ball, and he looks just 10 times better than he did last year for me. I know everybody kind of wanted to cite the very low yards per carry he had last season, and it looks like, at least for me, he's kind of making a believer out of his talent and just the way he's looked. So I'm buying Matt Jones, I think, for now and for the weeks going forward, just based on sheer volume alone.
I think this is a really important week for Matt Jones owners, and if people want to try to invest in Matt Jones, because Jay Gruden said coming into last week that they really felt that the way to help Kirk Cousins be more successful was to establish a run game, in a real run game, not just something that changes kind of the pace of them going down the field of the passing game, because that's what he really loves to do, is go down the field. But without without being able to really set up a play action, Kirk Cousins wasn't able to go down the field as well. And I think what you saw last week was them really trying to establish the run. And it worked. Had it not been for the defense just completely shitting all over themselves, trying to figure out how to tackle Isaiah Crowell, that game would have probably been a pretty decent blowout for Washington. So I think if that continues to happen early on in this game, that is a really good sign for Matt Jones. So, they may need to end at some point, just continue to throw, and that may hurt his overall numbers. And Baltimore has a good rush defense, so it may not be necessarily the best game But if you're seeing that he's getting, you know, 5-6 touches in the first, you know, quarter and a half, that's a pretty good sign that they really want him to be a big part of the running game.
Well, my thing is this too with Washington, because we've said multiple times how bad Kirk Cousins is, and this year it's been even worse in the red zone. If you look at the last 2 weeks, you see Matt Jones. You know, he's gotten 8 touches in the red zone the last 2 weeks. He started off with 4 the first 2 weeks. If you look at Kirk Cousins this season in the red zone or inside the 20-yard line, at least 35% completion percentage, 35%, and then 4 touchdowns.
It would be much higher if you included interceptions in that.
Well, 4 touchdowns, 2 interceptions in the 20-yard line. That's hideous. And if he continues that track record, then you're going to be seeing Matt Jones continue to get the ball inside the 10 and 20-yard line, because they need him to hold on to it and make sure that they at least get 3 points out of him.
They've got a decent offensive line.
They do. That's what I'm saying. Like, I think that this is all going to, as much as we thought that Washington would be nothing but pass oriented because of the first couple weeks of the year and because of what they did last season, I think we're going to slowly, that's why I'm buying Matt Jones. We're going to slowly see them gravitate to more of a balanced scheme to get to have Kirk Cousins be in the most successful, you know, position to win a game. And, you know, I think that that has everything to do with Matt Jones and this offensive line doing better as the season goes on. I think that this is the only way that Washington will be able to, you know, keep teams kind of guessing on the defensive side. And, you know, hopefully that kind of works itself out. They do get Philly 2 more times this season, which is a concern, including next week. But, you know, say Jones doesn't have a great game this week and he does kind of bad next week against Philadelphia. You know, I think that that presents a buying opportunity. You know, there's not, his schedule isn't filled with amazing matchups, but I think that, you know, the fact that they're not really splitting carries and he's getting at least 15 to 20 touches a game is so, you know, so valuable for fantasy.
Yeah, I mean, his schedule is not great, you know, rest of the way. I mean, he's got some, you know, a couple decent matchups sprinkled in. Detroit week 7, Dallas week 12, Chicago week 16. But, I mean, the other matchups, you've got Philadelphia,
Minnesota,
twice. You've got Minnesota, Green Bay, Arizona. I mean, you've got teams that can really shut down the run. So, I mean, you know, I'm willing to go out and buy Matt Jones, but I'm not paying top dollar for him.
Sure.
So, you know, let's move over to the Baltimore side of the ball and talk about the running back situation there. Because as you mentioned previously in the podcast, Justin Forsett has been cut. So, that means that it is Kenneth Dixon time, or so everyone in the fantasy industry would have you believe. But what's your opinion for this week and then moving forward?
For me, I think that Terrence Wentz is still going to get probably 70 to 80% of the workload. I mean, they might sprinkle in Buck Allen as well. You know, but I think for right now, you can't really bank on Dixon. I'm not starting him this week, if that's the question you're asking me. There's no way I think that you can feel comfortable starting him. You know, Washington has not been great against the run this year.
They've been absolutely atrocious.
Yeah, exactly. I was trying to be nice since you're a Washington fan. I mean, they've given up the second most fantasy points per game to running backs, just behind New Orleans. But, you know, I do think that we, you know, if you added him last week, that you should definitely continue to hold him. And I think that there will be a changing of the guard. I don't think that Terrence West will ever be out of this offense at all, you know, fully. He will, I think, always kind of get at least the goal line carries at the very least. And, you know, even maybe more so than that. It's really tough to really gauge where they're going to kind of go with him. But at least for now, I'm going under the assumption that it's going to be more of like a 50-50 backfield moving forward. And maybe since Dixon has higher upside, we see him get, you know, 70%. We see essentially the role switch where he gets 70% of the looks, and then Terrence West becomes more of a goal line kind of secondary option.
Yeah, I think there are a lot of people who are really banking on Kenneth Dixon coming in and, you know, taking the job pretty quickly. But I think Terrence West is, I don't think he's going anywhere anytime soon. So,
no.
Like, people that are really buying in on Kenneth Dixon, if you got Kenneth Dixon, go ahead and sell him. I mean, you know, he may get the role at some point, but I don't think it's going to be anytime soon. And in order to get in the playoffs, you have to, you know, you have to win a certain amount of games. And if you can get someone who can help you fairly well right now, especially if you need that at running back, I would go ahead and sell Kenneth Dixon for that in a heartbeat. All right. We have the Baltimore Ravens hosting the Washington Redskins. Mike, who you got?
I'm going to go with the Ravens. I just want to say Steve Smith is back, by the way, and I think he's a wide receiver three moving forward.
Yeah, I do not disagree with that. I'm going to take the Redskins.
Of course you are.
Of course I am. Let's move on. Houston at Minnesota. Mike, what's your takeaway?
Let's talk about DeAndre Hopkins, I guess.
Worried about DeAndre Hopkins right now?
I'm not worried in the sense that I hear a lot of other people being worried, because I hear like some kind of crazy, you know, stuff about this. Like he's going to be a wide receiver 3/2 the rest of the way. And, you know, like this is going to be a problem for the whole season. I think that that's a bit much, you know, especially with the fact that he was so valuable last year. I don't think that this is something that we can just like, you know, say is going to continue to be a norm. And if you just look at his targets, you know, he's averaging, you know, what, between four games, he's averaging, you know, over, what, 7 a game. So for me, like, I think that Hopkins is still a premier wide receiver one. I think that Fuller, as time goes on, is going to kind of, you know, garner more attention from the defense. Right now, he's getting nothing but single coverage, and he's doing whatever he wants with it. And I know that there was a, you know, I know they did like an NFL Statcast type thing on the, you know, on the telecast last week, or on the broadcast last week on Sunday Night Football or whatever it was, where Fuller was the fastest guy on the field in all of week 4. And that's probably true. And I love Fuller going forward, but I think that if anything, this really helps Hopkins. I've already been pretty vocal about, I don't think Lamar Miller is as good this year. And I don't think his role is anything great in terms of the red zone usage at all, because he still doesn't have a score this year. Hopkins is still being looked for in the red zone. I just think that people were kind of getting a little bit too worried about this situation. I'm still willing to buy Hopkins. Do I think he'll finish as a top 5 receiver like he did last year? No, but that's what I said in the preseason based on Fuller being there alone. I think that he's still a top 10 option the rest of the way. And if anything, I think that this is a sign that you should buy him, and you know, I think you'll be fine.
Yeah. I think you should try to go out and buy DeAndre Hopkins, but I think you should wait till after this week.
Yeah, I guess Minnesota.
Yeah, the Vikings have the best defense in the NFL, in my opinion. He's going up against Xavier Rhodes. It probably will not be a, you know, I mean, you can never really count Hopkins completely out, you know. So, I mean, even though he's going up against a great defense, he struggled holding in receptions last week. You know, would it surprise me if he, you know, catches, you know, 7 balls, scores 2 touchdowns, you know, 150 yards or something like that? No, it wouldn't. But I'm not going to bank on that this week. You know, you still got to start him. But I think next, you know, after this week is the, you know, time to go out and buy him. Look at his upcoming schedule. You know, after this week, he's got Indianapolis, you know, then he's at Denver, so not necessarily a great matchup. But then Detroit, Jacksonville, Oakland, San Diego, Green Bay, Indianapolis, Jacksonville, Cincinnati.
It's insane.
Like, absolutely amazing insane schedule rest of the way. And, yeah, you know, all he's got to do is get past, you know, week 7. And then he's got, you know, a bye week and a decent matchup against Green Bay in week 13. You know, but a week in which, you know, Houston's probably going to have to throw quite a bit.
And I know the Texans defense is good without J.J. Watt, but without J.J. Watt, they will not be as good, obviously. Yeah. And they're going to be in more, not necessarily shootouts, but in games where they might be behind, mm-hmm, you know, and you can easily see them, you know, throwing for more. And this, again, you know, Brock Osweiler wasn't with this team last year. It's going to take time, you know, and I'm not saying Brock Osweiler is amazing or anything like that, but
or
I do think
good. It's
yeah, or even good. I do think he's average, and an average quarterback we've seen can feed multiple guys.
Yeah,
and
a below average quarterback with DeAndre Hopkins
made him close to a number one receiver last year.
Exactly, you know? Right?
Mind you, again, Fuller wasn't there, and he was not. I mean, right now Fuller has one more target on the season than Hopkins, so I think that that's also why people are like a little worried about it. But I mean, if you look at last going into week 4 before, you know, the whole debacle of what I think 1 reception for 6 yards, he was a top 15 guy already, and you know, after week 4 was over, he ended up being outside the top 25. But he was ahead of Fuller pretty handedly going into last week, and he just had a dud game. So we can't really, in my opinion, I don't think we can overreact based on 1 really bad week, really 2 bad weeks, but in general 1 horrid week. And then, you know, moving forward, especially with that schedule, I think it's asinine to do so.
Yep. Let's see. What else is there to talk about in this game, Mike? I don't think there's, you know, I mean, Minnesota's defense is really, really good, people.
I mean, Jerick McKinnon is a, at least for PPR purposes, is going to be at least a running back two the rest of the way. I love what I've seen from him.
Yeah, he looks good. You know, you worried about any other part of the Minnesota offense?
Not really. We did see a Cordero Patterson sighting multiple times last week. And
it's,
I know
it's like we're coming in. It's like 2014 all over again. We got Cordell Patterson sightings. We have Brian Quick sightings. I mean, things are just going crazy up in this place.
They were pulling at, I know, you and I's heartstrings last week with the whole, yeah, I mean, Cordero Patterson was getting snaps ahead of Charles Johnson and ahead, again, of Laquon Treadwell, who they absolutely hate in Minnesota, or at least they must hate, because we haven't seen him on the field much at all. He was even inactive.
I worry if he's just not completely healthy.
Yeah, he might not be, but he's been active two games this season, and he's received four snaps total. It's not looking good for Treadwell. Anybody that's banking on a possible, you know, I always got to go back to this reference, but anybody that's banking on a, you know, Odell Beckham type, you know, leap from, you know, a couple years ago in the second half, I don't think that that's coming for Treadwell. But again, I mean, just something to monitor.
A buy low in dynasty, though. Like, if you're in a dynasty league, you're rebuilding, maybe try and go get Treadwell if he's not already on your team weighing you down. You know, yeah. I mean, for teams that are looking towards next year, he might be an interesting guy for that.
Mm-hmm.
All right, we have Houston at Minnesota. Mike, who you got?
I'm going to go Minnesota, even though I think Houston might give them a run.
I think Houston could give them a run, too, but I'm going to take Minnesota because that defense is just so good. Let's go ahead and move on to the next game, and we'll talk about the Jets at the Steelers. Mike, what's your takeaway?
My takeaway is I think that Ryan Fitzpatrick, rebounds in this game against Pittsburgh. I mean, obviously, it's not hard to rebound from 9 interceptions over the last 2 weeks, but you know, the fact that they are going on the road into Pittsburgh, I think automatically gives them a 14-0 disadvantage going in, which means they're going to have to throw. They can throw to multiple options, Matt Forte, Quincy Enunwa, who I think is a nice. I think we mention him every week, but you know, a wide receiver three with upside moving forward. And I think that Brandon Marshall gets, you know, fed a ton in this game as well. Pittsburgh defensively has not been good this year. Even though they, you know, laid it down against Kansas City last week, the conditions were terrible. There was rain everywhere. Alex Smith already has problems with, you know, throwing the deep ball. He still ended up with almost 300 yards and 2 touchdowns on sheer volume alone. And I think that Fitzpatrick, along with this in coordination with this Jets defense that is insanely bad against the pass, is going to be down again from the get-go, and we'll be seeing you know, a situation where I think that Fitzpatrick is just going to get a sheer, you know, volume. Just the sheer volume alone will make him a startable guy for this week. So again, I think that this is just a rebound game from him. I think he gets no less than 2 touchdowns and 250 yards if you're in a pickle, and especially in DFS on DraftKings, he's almost the bare minimum salary. He's worthy of a start this week.
Yeah, I agree with you. My takeaway is I think Sammy Coates is an interesting play if you're desperate right now at wide receiver this week.
Yeah.
Eli Rogers injured. Darius Heyward-Bey only caught one ball. Marcus Wheaton in returning from injury only had one target last week. So, you know, I know people say, oh, well, both of them scored a touchdown last week. Well, they only each got like one target each. So, like, that's not necessarily good for their value. They just made the most out of their one opportunity. So I think Sammy Coates could be the guy in, you know, kind of in a sneaky position, and probably pretty available. He's available in 31, or he's only owned in 31% of ESPN fantasy leagues right now. So
I love that you brought him up, because I wasn't even really thinking about it, but he has had 50 plus receiving yards in each and every game this year, two of them eclipsing, you know, 79 yards. Last week obviously was the better game in terms of targets and receptions, you know, 8 targets, 6 receptions. But they're, you know, throwing to him in the red zone multiple times as well. And this is, I mean, this the offense just got Le'Veon Bell back. So I don't think that we can really bank on what happened weeks 1 through 3 or even 1 through 4, or I'm sorry, 1 through 3, because in week 4, we saw their best player, or borderline best player, I guess, with Antonio Brown being there, come back, and we saw the offense just become a juggernaut once again. I think they're going to use Coates like they tried to do with Martavis Bryant.
Yeah, as they should, because he is very much like Martavis Bryant. You know, he's a big play kind of guy. And go up and get the ball. He has kind of the mental kind of miscues that haunt him. But he's a guy they really want to get involved in this offense. And we saw that last week. Like I said, you know, Wheaton only had one target. Bay only had one catch. And Coates, you know, he had six receptions for 79 yards. That means something. I know the numbers didn't necessarily, you know, come out the way, you know, in terms of overall fantasy points, the way in kind of Coates' favor. But, you know, what we're seeing is they really want him to be involved in this offense. And the Jets are like 22nd against fantasy wide receivers. So, this is a defense that he can exploit. All right, let's the Jets at the Steelers. Mike, who you got?
I'm going to take the Steelers.
Yeah, I'm going to take the Steelers as well. All right, let's go ahead and move on and talk about the Atlanta Falcons at the Denver Broncos. Mike, what is your takeaway for this game?
Well, other than C.J. Anderson being borderline a top three play for this week against mm-hmm. Atlanta's terrible run defense, you know, I think we have to see what happens in terms of we talk about Atlanta's running core all the time, but Tevin Coleman has this sickle cell trait problem that I believe it was Ryan Clark, from Pittsburgh had. And, you know, it gives them health issues when you go into altitude. Thus far, we have been told that Coleman is going to play and he will assume his normal role. For me, I kind of will believe it when I see it. You know, I think that Devontae Freeman is going to get more of the workload than usual. You know, I don't think people were going to not start him anyways, but if you were thinking about not starting him, I think that you should kind of change your mind in that facet and use him, because I do think that, you know, with Coleman, we don't know, even if the club thinks that if Coleman's going to be a certain way throughout the game based on, you know, tests or whatever, they don't really know until they play. And I think easily we could see Freeman, you know, again, being down to this Broncos team, get a ton of receptions, a ton of yards. We saw, you know, multiple running backs kind of get to them up the gut, including Jeremy Hill. So I think that this is a situation where Freeman needs to be a little bit more, I guess, you know, higher touted than what people think.
Yeah, I mean, for those who don't know what the sickle cell trait is it's a trait, and I'm totally going to butcher this because I failed high school biology. So, virtually what it is some African American or people of African descent have a sickle cell trait, and it means the red blood cells are shaped like a sickle. And if you don't know what a sickle is, Google it. So, and what happens is it makes it difficult for their body especially in high altitude situations, process oxygen into their bloodstream. And so it can be really, really dangerous, for if you have this trait, and you're in high altitude and then try to exert yourself, people can die from this. And so like you mentioned, Ryan Clark, has been one of kind of the biggest examples that he could not play, when Pittsburgh went to Denver.
I believe he's lost organs. Like, I believe he has lost multiple organs to his body due to that.
Yeah. So, I mean, it's really dangerous. I know they said Tevin Coleman is supposed to suit up and play, but I have a feeling he is not going to be very heavily used.
Yeah.
So, I mean, I ranked him, I think, 29th or 30th out of my running backs this week. When I did my ranking, I didn't realize he had the sickle cell trait. I probably would have put him probably in like the mid to low 40s. So, I mean, I think I'd much rather suit up. Who's a good example of some Fozzie Whitaker?
Yeah.
You know, I just don't know, you know, what I'm going to get from Coleman. I think this is going to be, going to be a game in which, you know, if he does play, maybe he only plays in short yardage bursts. Maybe he's a goal line back and that's it. But I wouldn't expect him to get, you know, 8 to 15 carries this week. I would expect at most to see maybe 5 or 6. All right. Atlanta Falcons at the Denver Broncos. Mike, who you got?
I'm going to tell you, the Broncos, I do just want to mention, like, Matt Ryan is the number one fantasy quarterback thus far, and Denver I wouldn't start him is my main point here. Don't start him against Denver. You know, top five guy, Cam Newton had 190 yards and a touchdown against them. Andrew Luck is a top six guy or top seven guy. He only had one touchdown and 197 yards. Pretty much three of the four quarterbacks that faced them have not eclipsed 200 yards. And then the other one, Andy Dalton, eclipsed it by 6 yards and didn't throw a touchdown. So I don't think that Atlanta's good enough to let Matt Ryan, or I don't think Matt Ryan's good enough to get by that.
All right. I'm going to take the Broncos.
I was going to say, what are you thinking about?
I try to instill some drama.
Some drama. Oh, okay.
So, you know, it's how I roll.
That was highly suspenseful.
You're welcome. Let's go ahead and move on to the next game and talk about Cincinnati at Dallas. Mike, what's your takeaway?
Since there's not really much to take away from this game, I think the easiest thing to talk about is Dez Bryant. It's looking like he is not going to play this week. And
I think Dez Bryant may be done for the year. Let's be honest here. I mean, this is not one of those injuries. You know, I mean, it's not like Dallas. I mean, I know Dallas is, what, 3-1 right now. Like, Dallas is not good.
Yeah, but they're going to compete. You know, Tony Romo is being told that he's going to be the starter when he comes back, which tells me, I mean, they have Ezekiel Elliott. They have a good enough defense to pass by, you know, and I don't think Dez is done for the year.
This injury is not going to get better.
No, but they're resting him, and, you know, they're 3-1 regardless. So,
but
I mean,
this isn't the type of injury that, like, gets better from rest.
No, it's not. And, you know, would it be the smart thing to do? Probably. But they want to compete. You know, I'm not a doctor, so I can't really say what, you know, whether what his chances are of coming back even, you know, 80% healthy this year are. But I do know that, you know, at least for this week, I don't think he's going to play. It's already been told that he's not going to play this week. But the fact that he, you know, people are even kind of testing it out and, you know, thinking that he might play this week tells me that he's not out for the season.
All right. Rest of the way, who would you rather have, Dez Bryant or Devontae Parker?
Dez, still.
I'm taking Devontae Parker. Dez Bryant or Sterling Shepard?
Shepard.
Dez Bryant or Michael Floyd?
If Floyd was doing anything, I would say Floyd. I'm going to take Dez.
I'm taking Floyd. I'm taking all these guys. I mean, even if he does play, like, how long can he sustain on this injury? I mean, this is not – I mean, we're talking about, like, a broken bone in his knee.
Yeah, and my thing is this with Dez, right? Because before the season started, I was not high on him at all. I don't have him on any of my redraft teams. Not high on him at all. If you're of, and I will say, you know, on your end, if you are of the, you know, mind that you think that he's not going to play at even 50% the rest of the way or at all, really, then of course, you know, sell for whatever you can, Devontae Parker, Floyd, any of those guys. For me, like, I feel like even at 60%, 70%, if he comes back, especially when Romo comes back in the red zone alone, he can gain value. He can get, you know, 2 touchdowns any given game, you know, for, you know, it's kind of like the Brandon Marshall effect. I mean, they target him so much in the red zone that I don't think that you can, you know, if he's going to end up hitting the field again, I don't think that you can reasonably take any of those other options other than Shepard, because I think Shepard is, you know, going to be consistently used. But I think that it really depends on where you're at there. I do think you bring up a good point, but I don't know enough about this injury to be really confident one way or the other.
If I own Dez Bryant right now, I'm going to the Amari Cooper owner. I am going to the Jordan Matthews owner. I am going to the Alshon Jeffrey owner. I'm going to these owners and going, listen, you know, I'm willing to kind of sell on him because I need a body or something like that. Will you make this move and seeing if I can get it done? You know, go to another owner that may be a tad bit frustrated. You know, or not, or, you know, the guys who are just looking at the points totals in your league, and, you know, and saying, listen, this guy, you know, is a first round pick, a second round pick in our league. You know, do you want to buy low on him?
Sure.
Go to the Brandon Marshall owner, but yeah, to me, would I sell him for Devontae Parker right now? If I had to. Like if there's no one else, if no one else will bite in my league, but I'm going to a number of different owners in the league, you know, go see the Jeremy at Macklin owner, you know, I mean, and I'm going to say, listen, I got Dez Bryant on the block. You interested?
Sure. I do want to just kind of piggybacking off the original point that Dez is probably going to be out. Bryce Butler, I think, becomes a very interesting play, especially in deeper leagues. Last week against San Fran, he played on 62 snaps, which was, you know, pretty damn near close, 80% of them, and had 9 targets. Ended up getting a red zone score, had 5 receptions for 40 yards. And then, you know, you also saw him get another red zone attempt later on in the game as well. I think that Butler has always had a nice size speed combination and is just a pretty solid route runner. Round 7 pick out of Oakland that ended up getting I think waived, and Dallas obviously picked him up, but a very interesting guy, very interesting talent. And especially if Dez is struggling to come back for the rest of the year or just keeps having these issues, Butler could certainly play a bigger role and is much more talented than anybody else on that wide receiver core.
All right, Cincinnati, Dallas, Mike, who you got?
I'm going to go Cincinnati.
Yeah, me too. Let's go ahead and move on. Buffalo at Los Angeles. How worried are you about Gurley right now? I mean, if you're a Gurley owner, are you panicking?
I mean, you definitely have to be worried. There's no way around it. I've been pretty much steadfast in my love for him, and I don't think that that's waning at all. My problem is that this offensive line and this offensive unit is doing its best to try and cripple him, in my opinion. We finally saw last week him get a couple receptions, which is nice. I mean, he ended up getting 5 receptions for 49 yards. The 5 receptions is a career high, and actually the yards are a career high as well. But, you know, come to think of it, wow, look at that offensive line or offensive coordinator of the Rams. You get your best player out in space. Who'd have thunk it? You know, and he ends up producing a little bit. I think that, you know, if you're a Gurley owner, there's really not much you can do. I don't think that you can sell him for nothing. If you wanted to do that, then I understand selling low on a guy, and I'm cool with doing that. But there's just not a lot out there that I'd be willing to do it for. You want to talk about Matt Jones? I'm not willing to do that yet. I'm not willing to trade Todd Gurley for Matt Jones. I'm not willing to trade Todd Gurley for, you know, Jordan Howard, guys like that. You know,
what about Melvin Gordon?
I don't think the Melvin Gordon owner would do that. I genuinely don't. I think the Melvin
Gordon owner. What about the LeSean McCoy owner?
I honestly don't know if they would do it either. I would still take Gurley.
Because
I
still have.
No, Zeke is above Gurley for me.
All right. God, yeah, there's another. You know, okay, let's say, would you go after Jeremy Hill?
No, I wouldn't. I mean, and part of it is because of the playoff schedule, and I've kind of always thought that from day one with him is that if you take out Seattle in week 15, he ends up getting Atlanta and San Fran at home, winnable games, you know, and that's always been kind of the prototypical game script where Gurley does well. I just think that at some point something has to change here, and, you know, I'm just going to base it off the talent. You know, at the end of the day, you know, I want to bank it on talent, and, you know, I think that it could definitely start this week against Buffalo. You know, Buffalo is not any, you know, great shakes on defense. I know they did just, you know, stifle the Patriots in New England, which something needs to be said for that. But at the end of the day, they had, you know, their third string quarterback out there playing with no thumb. And, you know, I think that this will be a, you know, even though Case Keenum probably isn't much of an upgrade above that, you know, I think that it will make a difference. And the Rams line has been hideous this year. They have to get a little bit more, they have to do a little bit more up front for Gurley. But I'm seeing the fact that they got him in space a little bit last week gives me a little bit of hope. The playoff schedule gives me a little bit of hope, and I'm just praying that the talent outweighs at some point.
All right. What's your takeaway for this game?
Let's see. I guess we'll talk about
it. I mean, if you don't have anything else, we can move on because we're running a little long.
Yeah, I mean, I do want to just say I think Robert Woods, you know, based on his target share the last couple of weeks, is the guy to own in the wide receiver core of Buffalo if you want to own anybody. And hopefully Charles Clay kind of turns things up a bit too.
Yeah, I don't want to own anybody there. So, all right. Buffalo at Los Angeles. Mike, who you got?
I'm going to take LA.
Wow. I'm going to take Buffalo. I think they do a fairly decent job stuffing the run. And I think if Los Angeles can't run the ball, they can't win. Let's go ahead and move on to the next game. San Diego at Oakland. Mike, what's your takeaway?
We obviously got word that Latavius Murray was doubtful essentially for this game due to a toe injury that had him in, or a foot injury that had him in a cast. We're getting a little bit more kind of information saying that he might try to play or give it a go. Regardless, I don't think that he is going to be a big factor in this game. I would not play him no matter what. I don't think you and I even ranked him this week based on that news.
No, neither of us did.
Which leaves us with DeAndre Washington and Jalen Richard. For the season, they both have played almost nearly identical snaps, 19% for Washington, 20% for Richard. On 29 touches, we have 184 total yards for Washington. On 22 touches, we have 183 total yards with a touchdown for Richard. Very dynamic players, both of them in their own right. Washington, the more skilled receiver, even though Richard can certainly catch the ball out of the backfield as well, he's more of the between the tackles guy. I think that this would be kind of an upgraded version in terms of Richard being better than Asiata and Washington being a little bit worse than McKinnon, but that same type of deal where Richard would be the goal line back and Washington would probably get a ton of the, you know, passing down work. Regardless, I think both of them are very good plays against San Diego. I think that you could easily slot both of them in the flex and DFS formats. I think both of them are certainly guys that I would be willing to roll with based on their price. San Diego has given up 6 rushing touchdowns already this year and 2 receiving touchdowns to running backs, third highest in terms of fantasy points per game to the position. There's just a lot stacking up right for the running backs here for Oakland, and I would definitely be willing to play either of them.
I think DeAndre Washington is the best running back on this team.
Yeah. Problem with that.
Richard may vulture a touchdown, but I mean, the guy that I'm starting based on talent alone is DeAndre Washington. So he's definitely the guy I want in this game. And I think he is definitely a flex kind of consideration.
Yeah.
All right. Let's see. I don't really want to talk. I mean, anything in San Diego you want to talk about?
I mean, we saw Dontrell Inman get 11 targets last week. And we also saw Travis Benjamin do terribly. He fumbled a ball where
Is not good. I know you.
No,
were on
he's
the
not that great.
I know you were on the bandwagon before the start of the season. I still maintain he is not a good wide receiver.
I mean, and there's not a lot to argue against that. I will say I thought he was going to be, I said, you know, before the season, I have him ranked at like 40 in terms of wide receivers. And right now he's a top 20 guy through 4 weeks. So, you know, you take that for what it's worth. He did get some really nice matchups.
I will not take that for what it's worth.
I catch myself saying that a lot too. I probably should calm that down. But, regardless, I think Benjamin is still a solid wide receiver 3-4 that you can plug into certain matchups. The interesting guy here for me and the wide receiver is still Tyrell Williams. He's still playing consistent snaps. He's still getting targeted. You know, I think that he is the most talented receiver on this team, piggybacking off of the DeAndre Washington talk. Both him and Williams were both guys that I have a ton of shares of based on, you know, drafting them, not just picking them up off the waiver wire. So their talent is certainly something that you can see on the field and on tape. And this, both Oakland and San Diego's defenses this year have been absolutely terrible. Jason Verrett, the guy that the corner that we always are worried about our wide receivers playing, is out for this game. We didn't mention Amari Cooper, but he's gonna go absolutely off this week, especially with the running back.
So Amari Cooper owners really hope so.
Yeah. But
Hunter Henry, really good play, available in about 50% of ESPN leagues. If you're hurting at tight end, Hunter Henry might be available on your team. I just picked him up in a 14 teamer to fill in this week for me. So I really like Hunter Henry. He's been very involved in the offense the last 2 weeks.
Yeah, we might actually see Joey Bosa this week. He's gotten full practices 2 days in a row. I will say Antonio Gates, has gotten a full and limited practice this week. So as far as Hunter Henry goes, I would monitor whether Gates plays, because if he does play, I would not play Henry this week.
I think Henry could have some value even when Gates returns.
He very well could.
The wide receiver situation there is a joke. Complete speculation, complete guess. But how good would Josh Gordon look in this offense?
You would say Josh Gordon there. I'm hoping he goes to the Bucs, so I don't want to think anything other than
that. Well, yeah, of course. But, I mean, he's in rehab in Los Angeles.
Yeah. Yeah.
You know, they're in dire need of a wide receiver.
What if he goes to L.A.?
God. What, how could you move from a worse situation than Cleveland?
Kenny Britt has a few things to teach you, Josh. Just stay away from that, stay away from that guy.
All right.
Ryan Quick, too. Just model citizens.
San Diego at Oakland. Mike, who you got?
San Diego. No, I'm going to take Oakland.
Yeah, I'm taking Oakland, too. Let's go ahead and move on to the Sunday night game. The Giants at the Packers. Mike, what's your takeaway?
My takeaway is Orleans Darko and Bobby Rainey are absolutely useless. I know
they
a lot of people were
garbage.
Talking.
Garbage. Oh, my God. They're so bad.
Yeah, I know. I hear so many people talking about, like, oh, pick up Bobby Rainey in PPR leagues and pick up Orleans Darko and this, you know, and I understand their touches have been going up. But Rashad Jennings almost played last week. He's gotten, you know, two limited practices this week. It's a thumb injury, people. It's not like a ACL or, you know, some type of, you know, soft tissue injury or anything like that. So Jennings is still my man on this running back core here. And, yeah, and not one that I really want to touch.
Yeah, you don't want to touch any of them this week against Green Bay. It was the number one defense against the run.
Yeah, and they are every bit as good as the number one defense against the run. If you watch Green Bay against the run, they are absolutely tenacious. So, as far as a play this week, that was more just a stance for the season that I think Rashad Jennings is the guy that you would want to own here. Maybe a little bit of Paul Perkins sprinkled in. But regardless, I for DFS and for season long, Odell Beckham Jr. is a top three receiver in this league. And I understand he's throwing some fits, and I understand that he's upset and he should be. Yeah, and
he absolutely should be.
But at the end of the day, guys, he is going to absolutely eat this year. And if you are trading him because you are worried in any way, shape, or form about this, then you need to not worry about it and not trade him at all. In terms of targets and stuff, yeah, we were worried. Like if somebody like Victor Cruz came back and was doing okay, like oh my goodness, like we might end up getting less from Odell Beckham Jr. This isn't a result. You know, the fact that we got a bad week was because he faced Minnesota. Mm-hmm. You know, Xavier Rhodes is absolutely elite, and there's no, and I understand he didn't even cover him the whole game because he didn't. You know, but once somebody kind of gets into Odell Beckham's head, it kind of ends up being the thing. But he's led the team in targets in week one, in week two, in week three, and was tied for the lead in week four. There is no target share problem. He is not the second guy on this offense to anybody. He's not the second guy to Sterling Shepard. He's not the second guy to Victor Cruz. He has 39 targets on the year to 26 for Shepard and 24 for Cruz. The running backs are a joke and the tight ends are a joke. There's nobody on this team that the Giants need more than Odell Beckham Jr. And I continually will say that to anybody that asks me about it. I just traded in a very shallow, my work league. I traded Lamar Miller and Michael Crabtree straight up for Odell Beckham Jr. And the guy that gave me Odell Beckham Jr. thought he stole the Crabtree and Lamar Miller from me. But on the other end of it, I'm going to end up killing him in this trade because Odell Beckham Jr. again is a top three receiver in this league. And this is all just a bunch of noise.
I completely agree with you. And on that note, New York Giants at the Packers. Mike, who you got?
I'm going to take the Packers at home.
Yeah, I'll take the Packers too. Let's move on to the Monday night matchup so we can wrap this up. Tampa Bay at Carolina. Mike, what's your takeaway?
For the love of God, Charles Sims, please be healthy enough to play in this game, because if not, then we will get the experience that is Jacquizz Rodgers, who actually did okay last week. I'm not going to like sit there and shit on him a lot, but no, he got 6 rushes for 25 yards last week. If for some reason Jacquizz is the starter against the Carolina this week, he's not a start for me, not even in, you know, deeper formats. I don't think he's even a flex. Carolina's run defense is much better than they've probably shown to this point. Their front seven is probably insanely pissed off that they just got lit up for 300 yards against Julio Jones. There's going to be a lot of adjustments on this defense, but regardless, I think Jameis Winston will be fine if you need to start him this week. He has been a solid quarterback this year. He did get, you know, Denver Broncoed last week, but I do think that he's a solid start for this week against a secondary that's a little bit worse. Mike Evans is a solid start. So, you know, in general, I think you got to monitor Charles Sims. If he does play, then he is going to be limited. He's always been somebody that's kind of gotten nicked, you know, here and there. But in general, I don't think there's a lot of starts other than Mike Evans and maybe some Cam Brate if you needed to go that route.
Yeah. I think Kelvin Benjamin could have a pretty huge game.
Absolutely.
Not because I'm a big Kelvin Benjamin fan. You know, I mentioned last week, and I still believe this, that Kelvin Benjamin isn't completely healthy right now and is still slowed from the ACL surgery of last season. But Tampa, I could get 100 yards and a touchdown against Tampa Bay.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
I mean, he did last year against them, I believe twice. So, yeah, he did almost twice.
Kelvin Benjamin did?
Yeah. I'm sorry, 2014.
I was like, that'd be really impressive considering.
Yeah, he did it without us knowing, like in practice sessions.
Like with a torn ACL, he torched your defense. That's how bad you guys are.
He did it in a wheelchair and crutches.
All right. Tampa Bay at Carolina, Mike, who you got?
No Fozzie Whitaker love? Come on, bro. I'm going to go with Carolina.
If you are desperate in a PPR league, go right ahead. Like, I don't have a problem. Like, in a standard league, I don't know if I would necessarily do it unless I'm, like, really desperate. But I think Fozzie Whitaker is a flex consideration PPR.
I just think that he's better than Cameron Artis Payne. I don't know why you've always liked Payne, but he's not very good at anything. He's not elusive. His, speed is not very good.
I was just banking on Jonathan Stewart being injured and him being the only option. I didn't think Fozzie Whitaker would, rise out of the ashes of his old Cleveland Browns uniform and be able to perform.
Yeah, well, as far as you Jonathan Stewart owners, I would say I would target week 7 as a possibility of him coming back and being able to play. If he doesn't return then I think
he's back next week.
I'm sorry, not week 7, the week 8 bye. So week 7 they have a bye, so week 8 is when I would kind of target a return for him.
Oh no, I think he's back next week from what Ron Rivera was saying.
He could, if he plays against New Orleans then light it up.
Yeah, exactly. I think honestly if it wasn't for the weather conditions kind of coming into play in this week, I think there could be a chance he would suit up for this week. But I think with how wet the field is probably going to be in Carolina, that they may not want to quite yet let him come out.
Gotcha.
All right. Tampa Bay at Carolina. Mike, who you got?
Carolina for 300, Alex.
Yeah, I'll take Carolina as well. And that is going to wrap us up, Mike. Why don't you tell people where you can be reached and what you're working on?
Yeah, you can reach me on Twitter where I will be constantly chatting probably about playoff baseball and about fantasy football at Mike Werner, FWFB. And check out the website, friendswithfantasybenefits.com. I just posted a target rundown of last week, and I also put down some leaderboards at each position, running back, wide receiver, tight end, to kind of give you guys a little bit better landscape of what is going on with the target shares around the league and around each team. I'll probably be doing something like that each and every week. It might not necessarily be targets each week, but just something along those same lines. You can definitely continue to listen to the DFS podcast and check out everything going on. We have our ranks that always come up each week. Check out the baseball podcast as well that we will be running out throughout the offseason if you're a baseball fan.
And you can reach me on Twitter at Justin Mason, FWFB. I'll be tweeting out about football Sunday and then about baseball probably the rest of the week because it's playoff baseball time. The time of year where the Giants win the World Series every 2 years.
Or you won't hear from Justin at all if the Giants lose to the Cubs, at all.
I will disappear and Eli will be hosting next week. you can read anything I write for football on friendsoffantasybenefits.com, for baseball on FanGraphs. I've been putting out my plays against the spread every week and finally rebounded. Went 4-1 against the spread last week. The only game I missed was I took the under in the New Orleans Saints Chargers game, which was an obvious mistake. So, but still, 4-1 against the spread, I think brought me up to 500 on the year, just about. So I'll have to double check. But the last 2 weeks have both been the plus column, so I'm doing pretty well now after a rough start to the year. So definitely check that out. Please give us a rate and review on iTunes. Definitely helps us out. And that is going to be it for this week. So for Mike and myself, thank you for listening. Have a fantastic football season.